I have this weird association. Every time I hear The Cure, I think of cats. I don't know why that is. I have no rhyme or reason, but every time I hear that Metacure song, not necessarily Love Cats, but every time I hear a Cure song, my mind instantly goes over to cats. So there you go. That's Thursday in the Tin Cup household. Everyone, you're listening to Drive Through HR. Brian is traveling somewhere in Ohio or Washington, D.C. Not really sure where he's at. He's definitely not going to be on the radio show today. That Nisha and I both know. You are listening to Drive Through HR. Nisha and William are here. We have a wonderful guest. And so without any further ado or quasi-witty comments from William, Jennifer, how are you doing today?
Well, hi, William and Nisha. Thank you for having me on again. Did you know this is my third time? So I'm just going to go ahead and say third time's a charm.
Well, let's talk. We won't talk about the last two performances, right? I mean, we're past
That's
that
right.
now.
Okay,
the pain and suffering were past. All right, so
but you know, third time's always a charm. So, hi there. I'm Jennifer Miller.
Jennifer, for those that didn't listen to the first two shows, why don't we back up? Introduce yourself. Tell us a little. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
You bet. Well, as I said, my name is Jennifer Miller. You can follow me on Twitter at Jennifer V. Miller. And I'm a former HR generalist and a corporate training manager for many, many years. And these days I've kind of evolved. Now I'm a business writer that focuses on leadership and talent management. So that's what I find myself thinking about, researching, and talking about these days.
And don't forget the V. That's what I learned.
That's right.
Don't even think about letting the V go. All right.
No, because, you know, Jennifer Miller, there's only 700 million of us.
Well, Millers, wasn't that when in the 13th century when people got their names by what they did?
Right.
So Millers, right. Somewhere in your history, you've got that going for you.
That's right.
It would be nice to have the name Blacksmith, right? So I wonder what you guys do back then. He played with fire. What is keeping you up at night these days?
Well, gosh, it's a great question, and I know that's the tagline for Drive-Through HR. William, I've been thinking a lot lately because I've been doing some research on individual development plans, IDP, as it's often known in the HR parlance. And I know that's not a particularly sexy topic, but I think it can be really interesting if you look at it a certain way. And one of the things that my research has uncovered is it's sort of a love-hate thing, right? I think most companies, I couldn't find a good stat for small organizations, so I would love to hear yours and Nisha's take on this. But I think that most companies have some sort of a formalized process for helping employees develop professionally. But I'm not sure that I think it's kind of a love-hate deal, right? It's like, what's not to love about it? It's positive, it's growth-oriented, but I'm not sure that everybody is thrilled when it comes down to sitting down and doing something about it. So I'd be curious to know from you, I know that large companies, about 97% of them, have a formalized IDP process in place, but what's your sense around mid to smaller companies?
Well, you know, what's great topically about this is the intersection of who owns your career. Who owns the development, the management of one's career? Because I think a lot of people have, you know, the personal improvement PIPs, personal improvement plans, where, you know, tied to some type of performance discussion, feedback session, however you want to frame that up. Then there's some type of plan to get better or to, you know, whatever, make adjustments, etc. But, you know, as I think about it, I almost wonder about generationally how, you know, 30 years ago, the company took care of all this stuff for you.
Right.
You know, they put you on plan and they helped kind of augment all the things around you. And, I mean, you just got to show up to work and, the company, quote unquote, the company took care of a lot of this for you. even in small companies. I mean, hell, even, probably more so in small companies. But, you know, with today's workforce and free agent nation, et cetera, I you know, as you were talking about it, both in pre-show and you know, right out of the gate, it for me, it begs the question of, you know, do I still allow the company to manage my career? Is that the expectation of, I'm Gen X, but is that the expectation of millennials that the company is somehow going to manage their career or put them on some type of plan? Or should they come to the table with, you know, their version of a plan on what they need to fix, et cetera?
Yeah, and I really like where you're taking this because, you know, what, as I was thinking through chatting with you guys today, what I came up with was really, you know, that when you think about IDPs, there's really sort of three viewpoints. You know, you've got the viewpoint of the HR professional, you've got the viewpoint of the leader, the manager, who ideally should really be the linchpin in all of this, and then you've got the employee. And so, you know, what I hear you wondering about is this notion of who owns your career, and should you show up with your list already made? I love that question. I love it. And I do wonder if employees are really grasping that opportunity. And I also think I wonder, too, about some of the more mundane aspects and what those mundane aspects, like the way the form looks and how easy it is to fill out, what does that do to the experience, if you will, of a person trying to get better at their job?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Jennifer.
No, go ahead. Nisa, chime right in, please. I'd love to hear
from you. Well, going back to what Willem has said, and as you started talking about mundane aspects, while most of the organization has tied this program to the performance evaluation, yet, as we all know, you know, they start all this initiative, but in order to take this to the next level, it involves a partnership between employee and the supervisors, right? So it doesn't happen. I mean, that kind of interaction is not happening, or is it missing in the current workforce? Why this kind of an individual development plan is not that successful as an executive development plan? What do you think?
So are you? That's interesting you bring that up, because I checked in with some of my colleagues to find out how closely an individual performance plan, or like, you know, William called them a PIP. How closely are they tied to performance review? And from the research that I can find, it's kind of split down the middle. I think a lot of them are very closely tied to performance review, but some of my colleagues who are working for more progressive companies, they're kind of splitting that up. It's tied in that you have this performance review discussion, which may surface opportunities for development, but it's still not... That conversation happens separately, and it might be linked in the talent management system electronically, but a lot of companies philosophically are splitting those two things so that an employee can feel free, like William suggested, to take more ownership of their career, which I think is a really interesting way to look at it. When I was in corporate America, I worked for a company that is very well known. It's a nationally known company. And in fact, I was doing some research this morning and discovered that this particular company is going into Training Magazine's Hall of Fame for Best Employee Development Practices. They'll be inducted in 2014. And so it was a great organization to work for, and they had wonderful employee development practices. But ironically, I found their personal development plan, that portion of the process, to be confusing and difficult to do. And there was nobody more interested in personal development than Jennifer V. Miller, because I was a training manager. I was in charge of employee development, and I was one of those nerdy people who love performance reviews. So if I found it difficult to do the form, what do you think the average employee who was maybe a little cynical or skeptical would think, you know? So mm-hmm. That's kind of what I find myself thinking about, is if we've got listeners who are in charge, who have that HR viewpoint, it's their job to make sure that this process flows smoothly and attends to the philosophical part of IDP, not the paperwork part, but the philosophical part, which is we as an organization want to help you grow, and by you growing, you then in turn benefit the organization. So I think that's really interesting that even some of the most well-known and well-recognized organizations in employee development, they still have a few kinks to work out.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad you brought that up. And as you said, I was working back in India, and then I have dealt with this kind of a situation when we talk to the top management regarding employee development. When it comes to reaching out to people and doing helping them have a career advancement opportunity within the organization, they're much more interested in focusing their time and effort and money on executives or senior leaders. But when it comes to the middle-level management or middle-level employees, they are kind of skeptical in terms of putting the money or effort into that.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things I've noticed too, Nisha, and I'm wondering, William, if you have an opinion on this as well, where there's all sorts of money spent around high-potential employees in investment in activities for them, but perhaps not so much for the mid-level performer. And I was wondering what your observations have been around that as well.
Yeah, well, I tend to think of the individual development plans and PIPs and things like that. I tend to put those, while I know that they're more in the training bucket, and really, let's be honest, the current mindset in America is that 80% of the firm's value comes from 20% of the employee base, the people that we call high performers or hypos or top performers. We can call them a lot of different things, but whether or not we have that right or wrong is probably subject for a great debate. But I think if you asked any typical HR person or any executive, they would tell you 80% of the value comes from 20% of the people, and thusly they spend a lot of resources in the programs to basically retain said top talent.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that currently we think of PIPs and individual development plans and things like that. I think we think of them closer to trading. And I personally, William speaking, I think of them more as an engagement and retention tool. And therefore, probably more, they should be more mass marketed, meaning we should do them with every single employee. You get onboarded, and we get to know you deeply in the recruiting phase. We take that into onboarding, and we know all the gaps. We know where you're broken. We know the things that you need to work on, and we start that from the day that you're onboarded. And I believe that's one way, if done correctly, I think that's one way you separate yourself from the rest of the companies. It's also a way to engage your workforce, all of the totality of your workforce, not just the 20%.
Mm-hmm. Is it your sense that many organizations are not providing some sort of a formalized development plan for a decent portion of their organization then? Are you getting that sense?
Yeah, my mid-cap and below, it's break-fix. The development plans stem from something that's broken. So something didn't happen. Quarterly goals weren't met, and whether or not it's tied to the performance reviews or not, that's when we got to put people on plan. Like, plans are almost a negative. They have a negative connotation to the folks that are not in the high-performing group.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And when it ties to the...
Nisha, did you want to chime in?
Oh, yeah. I was telling to William's point, when it tied to the succession planning process strategies within the organization, as William said, this middle management or the people who are kind of not that high potential employees are not being considered.
Mm-hmm. I think we had a couple different conversations going on around IDPs right now. I mean, one of the things that I'm hearing discussed from sort of the macro level from William's perspective is this notion of who, quote unquote, gets or deserves an individual development plan. And then, Nisha, you're kind of positing this issue of, should it be developed should it be developmental? Is it fixing something that's broken? And I guess when I was in that role, the organizations I worked for, the performance review was about setting goals for a shorter horizon, and then matching, assessing your performance to those goals, and then rolling, ideally having a monthly or a quarterly conversation, then rolling it all up in a nice neat package at the end of the year. That's ideally how it was supposed to happen. And then the way that I always positioned it with when I was an HR manager and coaching work team leaders was the IDP is linked to those things, but it's really a little bit longer horizon, and it's about the employee's professional growth. And it might be very what I would characterize as technical stuff, whether it was if they were in finance, seeking certain certifications, if they were in IT, keeping up on various different technological advances. And it could also be more of the interpersonal stuff as well, learning how to lead project teams and, that sort of thing. So that's always kind of how I looked at it. But I also know that I have a viewpoint that has to do with working for larger organizations that have some of those systems in place, and they've run through the growth cycle of understanding that it is good for all employees, not just the high potentials, to have an individual development plan. So it's kind of interesting to hear you guys talk about it.
Well, we would actually love to hear your experiences that you have already worked with some clients or some of your employers that you have worked with. How did you get started with this program as individual development program? And then how did you get the buy-in from the senior leaders or the top management? So that it will be helpful for our audience.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, some of the clients that I'm working with and have really colleagues that I've been talking with, I checked in with a couple of them before the call today, and they're using a very standard employee development model called the 70-20-10.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's if you Googled 70-20-10, you would see that it's a very standard model that's been around for quite some time. And how this is laid out is that when you think of the number of hours that an employee is going to develop, let's say for a year, that they're going to devote to professional development, of that slice of pie, so I'm going to use really easy math and say 10 hours a year, which I know is low, but let's just do easy math because I was not a finance major in college. I was a psych major. So you take 10 hours, and then what you do is you apportion it by a 70%, 20%, 10% split. So 70% of the activities that are devoted to professional development should come from on-the-job experiences, 20% learning from others, so that would be like mentors, coaching, observing their leader in different situations, 360-degree assessments, and then the remaining 10% would actually be from formal training, going to a conference or internal company training. And so what that would mean if you took 10 hours is 7 of those 10 hours would be devoted to on-the-job kinds of opportunities, 20 to learning from other 2 hours, and then 1 hour. And so that kind of gives you a split of how to look at the different types of activities. And people in the training profession get nervous about that because they think, well, if I'm an e-learning expert or a facilitator in the class, in instructor-led classes, what does that mean for my job? And I don't really think it means anything different if you've been handling the function of training in the way that it should be, because training, classroom, formal e-learning or classroom learning should only be for people who don't know how to do something. New employees, for example, come into a new environment, and they might have to learn a lot about the company's systems or the particular function of their department. But as a person grows in experience, then they don't need that more formal training, but they might benefit from having a mentor, or they might then benefit from taking stretch assignments and leading a cross-functional team, which would fall into the category of the 70% on-the-job experiences. So, Nisha, to answer your question, that is a format that I think a lot of clients are having some success with.
It is. Well, actually, when you talked about 70-20-10, but yesterday I talked to the leadership development head at Wipro India, and they have a fantastic initiative that they are doing as leadership journeys. at Wipro. So they are utilizing this 70-20-10, and a selected batch of people will go through detailed a training program where, as you said, the personality, mentoring, and then their approach to these employees will create, a connectivity to the business. And then they have an intense outdoor exercise and performance 360-degree, all those activities that they have connected to this 70-20-10 rule. So I was asking him the same question, you know, as you talk or mentor these people based on their personality, based on their attitude, well, you know, best employees don't always make best managers, right? So how do you kind of find a balance in terms of creating the right attitude in a manager?
Mm-hmm. Well, my personal opinion is that people come to the job with their attitude. So that's not something that can really be they come with that. Now, as a leader of an organization or a manager of a department, you can certainly create an environment where the right type of quote-unquote attitude can flourish. So I do take your point about some of the best technical employees. They have technical capability in their field of expertise, don't always make the best managers or senior leaders. I agree with that completely. So what you're looking for with those developmental opportunities is to put people in situations where they need to try out or try on those new skill sets, like leading a complicated, contentious meeting, like making a presentation to the senior execs in your organization. I will tell you, there is one downside that I've learned to the 70-20-10, and as often happens with really popular, easy to understand models or conceptual constructs like the 70-20-10, what happens is people latch on to the wrong aspect of it. So let me give you an example. I was just meeting with the talent management manager of a very large Fortune 500 company that has fantastic people development practices, long history, well recognized for it. And of course, they use the 70-10-20-10 methodology for their performance plans. And I was kind of discussing a potential solution that I might be able to offer to her organization, and she said, well, that's kind of like training, and that would bump us, many of our employees, over their 10% allotment for training. So I'm not sure that we could consider your solution. And so I thought that was a really interesting comment to make. I think sometimes employers might lean a little too heavy on those percentages rather than looking at what the employee life, where the employee is in his or her life cycle. As I said, if it's a new employee, that percentage at 10% is probably going to need to be bumped up the first year or two of their employment with your company. I think there are a myriad of factors that if you're going to use some sort of a systematic approach like a 70-20-10, that's a good place to start, but you really need to use common sense in terms of how you're going to apply it within your organization.
Nice. Jennifer, with development, with developmental opportunities in general, and I'm going to give you two poles. One pole being it's a perk, and the other pole.
Oop! Did I lose you?
Hello.
Did we lose William?
No, I guess this is Nisha. Hi, Jennifer. I guess William went mute. I guess so. Oh, yeah, we
sorry.
Have
really one. Yeah, sorry about this. Jennifer, did you get that last question?
I heard the
no.
One is a perk and the other is a...
Yeah, fair enough. So on one pole is perk, developmental opportunities. One's perk and the other is moral responsibility to give them to all of your employees. Where do you feel like developmental opportunities kind of falls in all of that?
So it's the old, to what degree is an employee, quote, entitled to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Where do I fall on that continuum?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have always felt that the companies that I benefited from most and in turn was able to then benefit those companies were those that probably fell much more into the camp of, look, it, we're going to give you developmental opportunities. Not to the point of it's you are entitled to it, but certainly not that you have to, quote, earn it. Charlene Lauby, who writes The HR Bartender, had a very vigorous discussion about training as a, quote, perk on her blog several months ago. And I thought it was very, very interesting to see the different viewpoints. And, William, I think the pendulum is swinging towards as it, when an employee enters the doors, it is not positioned to them that, look, at you're entitled to training. You get it no matter what you do because you deserve it. I think the pendulum is swinging back towards, aside from basic orientation and the basic skill training that one needs to do their job, anything above and beyond that I think is being scaled and being positioned more as something that one may want to aspire to and have to demonstrate your chops before you quote-unquote earn it. I don't know about that. I got to say I'm the jury. For me personally, the jury is out on that. So that's where I fall on it.
I got you. Okay, Lenny, we got about 3.5 minutes left, and I have a software question. Where in the world does software, HR software in particular, and individual development plans, where do they intersect for you?
For me, they intersect going back to this client that said she is, you know, they intersect in that it's an access point for employees to be able to use the IDP process. So if from a software standpoint it facilitates that happening, I'm all for it. But I think they really got to make sure they do a lot of user tests to be sure it's accessible, it makes sense, and it furthers the process. It doesn't hinder it.
If folks, all right, last question real quick. If folks haven't kind of gone down this path yet in creating IDPs, where do you suggest they first start out?
Do you know who is a great, I will have to get the link is, if you go to Dan McCarthy's blog, greatleadershipbydan.com, or you even just Google Dan McCarthy and Great Leadership, you, on his homepage, I think it's on the left-hand side, he's put together a very reasonably priced ebook, you know, immediate for available download, that really walks through both succession planning and the individual development process. So I'm going to give Dan a little plug. I think that would be a great place to start.
Awesome. How can people best reach you, blog, LinkedIn, email, Twitter handle, all that stuff?
You bet. Well, again, the Twitter handle is Jennifer V. Miller. My blog is The People Equation, so Google that. You'll find me. And starting in about 2 weeks, I'm going to be a columnist for the Answers.com website under their HR page. So you could type in hr.answers.com.
Oh, I love it. Well, as always, well, this is the third time I've gotten smarter. thank you very much.
And the first time for me.
Well, I appreciate it, Nisha and William. I wish you a fabulous day, and thank you for having me on Drive Through HR.
Awesome. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon, and thanks again for listening to Drive Through HR.
Rumors my spreading round in that Texas town about the shack outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you want to go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.